are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program. Put some money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Television Network. We've got a full house on the program this evening. Steve Merrill joins us as he does every Friday. We're talking Army Navy with Steve. We're talking NFL football with Steve. We'll talk a little FCS playoffs with Steve Merrill as well. Al Vartanian joins me in studio. We talk LMS, MLS Cup motherfucking final. Let's start over. All right, 3, 2, 1. You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program. Put some money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Television Network. Full house alert. Full house alert on this Friday edition of the program. Steve Merrill joins us as he does every Friday. We're going to talk Army-Navy, man, Commander-in-Chief Trophy on the line. We're talking NFL football, Week 14, NFL football. Interesting basketball game on tap this evening. Boston Celtics and the San Antonio Spurs. I got a pick for you on that. Steve Merrill's going to talk a little bit about the FCS playoffs. We got Weber State and James Madison, the Dukes. They've won 24 straight games. Al Vartanian's going to join us. We're going to talk about the MLS Cup. Seattle Sounders and TFC rematch from last year with scoreless draw in regulation and through it extra time, and Seattle won in the penalty kicks. Al Vartanian joins us in studio. John Gallagher, a longtime veteran broadcaster, has written a book, Babylon, and actually looks pretty cool. Some great hard partying stories and more. John Gallagher is going to join us in studio. So let's get right down to business right now so we have as much time as possible with the guest. Falcons beat the Saints last night in the National Football League on Thursday Night Football, putting us really one step closer to pure chaos, man. And, you know, we're in the final month of the regular season right now, and I actually know less now than I did than when before the year started, actually. It's freaking crazy. Every time you think a team has turned a corner, you think this team is dialed in, that team is locked in. You know, stuff can change in a heartbeat in the National Football League. Let's look at the Atlanta Falcons. You know, it's hard to believe, but you know the Atlanta Falcons had the exact same record at this time of the year as they did last year? Falcons went in to their football game with a 7-5 record, the exact same record that they had last year. And then they ended up running the table, and we all know what happened. Dallas Cowboys actually had home field advantage last year. How'd that work out for them? Not very well, evidently. You know, everybody was planning a parade, man, for the Philadelphia Eagles a couple of weeks ago. I don't know. The Eagles are certain to have home field. Listen, the Eagles, the division that they play in, they're going to win this division, but home field, they lose against the Rams. Home field's not happening for them. New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints look like the best team in the NFC over the last couple of weeks, and I think I cursed them. Forget about the Ander curse. It's the Morenci curse. I'm tweeting last night about how the Saints look like a Super Bowl team. I'm tweeting about how great Kamara is. Kamara gets hurt. Saints blow the game, and then you know what? Falcons beat them again. Next thing you know, the Falcons are division champions. Carolina Panthers, every time the Panthers lose a game, everybody writes them off. You can't write off the Panthers. I think the Panthers are actually going to beat the Vikings this week. Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay Packers. You know, I gave up. How many times? Ah, the season's done. They're done. It's over. No, evidently it's not over for the Green Bay Packers. Packers are going to beat the Browns and get Aaron Rodgers back next week. Far from over. You know, one team that actually looks like they're for real, but I think they're going to lose this week, the Minnesota Vikings. Tough spot for the Vikings, man. Third consecutive road game in a row for the Minnesota Vikings. Four of their last five games have been on the road, the Minnesota Vikings. And the Carolina Panthers are the type of team that as soon as you give up on them, that's when they step up and in and scratch you. We got some live dangerous cats here with the Panthers. Panthers are an 8-win football team still. They're freaking dangerous. There really are no certainties in the National Football League besides the fact that those evil empire, son-of-a-bitch, cheating, dirty-ass bastard New England Patriots and all of the above, they do cheat. They do randomly, randomly and repeatedly. Yeah, whatever way they can cheat, they are dirty. Gronkowski is just a stupid jarhead, and I meant what I said last week. I hope Gronkowski gets injured, and I never say that about athletes. I hope he shreds his knee and he's done for the year. I do. And you know what? If the Buffalo Bills don't do it in the last game of the season, I'm going to be very disappointed, but it's not like the Bills have ever disappointed me before, right? Patriots going to the Super Bowl with or without the stupid jarhead tight end. Listen, the Steelers are good, but we've seen this movie before, man. They're not beating the New England Patriots in the playoffs. A dangerous team right now in the AFC. Forget about the Chargers. The Baltimore Ravens, all right? The Ravens are a real dangerous team, but losing Jimmy Smith is going to catch up to them, man. But this is like the end of the first, part one of Who Shot Mr. Burns, when Wiggum looks into the camera and he goes, I don't know who shot Mr. Burns, do you? I don't know. I know the New England Patriots are going to be in the Super Bowl. Who are they going to be playing against? You tell me. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. We welcome Steve Merrill, ProSportsInfo.com, CoversExperts.com. Steve, always a pleasure. How you doing?
Hey, Gabe, doing well.
So, Steve, it's a light weekend as far as college football is concerned. We do have the FCS playoffs, quarterfinals. We have Army, Navy, and we've got some NFL football. And then next week, the bowls start next Saturday, Steve, all 41 of them.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like there's more every year. And, hey, look, it's a good thing for us, obviously, as handicappers. That means there's more opportunity to find value, and it's a great thing for fans to watch. And if there's ever is a time when the NCAA needs to just come out and admit that gambling helps them, it's the bowl season. Because do you think anybody would really be watching these games on ESPN on a Tuesday night when the stadium has 10 people in it?
I want to warn people not to lose their holiday bankroll on the early bowl games. I've been there. I've done it before. You're excited. Oh, college football bowls. I'm going to get involved. And by the time it's December 21st, you want to slit your wrists. And then, and then it's Christmas 4 days later, and you have no money. So be very careful. And, you know, Steve, all kidding aside, actually, but when you bet, unless you're in Las Vegas or unless you're in Las Vegas, essentially, unless you're in a place where you're going to get paid immediately after the game, you're not going to get paid. Like, people that bet with bookies, that's a once-a-week type of deal. So if you lose, you know, you play the games this week, you have to pay for that next Friday, or you're going to get paid for that next Friday. So I'm warning people, Christmas is only a couple of weeks away right now. It's rapidly approaching. The bets that you make this weekend will affect your holiday cash flow, all right? You know, you're betting now. That's going to have to be rectified within, December the 16th. You know, and then after that, there's one more week before Christmas. And I've been around long enough to know that a lot of times when bookies are down, they'll tell you, why don't we just roll it over through Christmas? And I've been there before, too, where I've been down and I've told a bookie, hey, it's December 24th. I'd beat you, but, it's clear. Then it rolls over. I've been around a long time, guys. I'm warning you. Things can get a little dicey come the holiday time when you're betting. So be more selective. It's something that I'm going to have to remember, Steve.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes to so many bigger theories. I mean, first of all, you should be playing with a bankroll that, you know, whether you win or lose at a given week or month even doesn't affect your lifestyle. You know, I've always said it's not rent money. It's not your food money. It's a bankroll. It's an investment account.
Yeah, but
of course, most people listening probably don't do that. But, you know, like I said, it goes to bigger. And you probably should be playing with either a legal sports book in Nevada or one of the big internet sports books in which, you know, you don't have to worry about getting paid.
But even them, and when you're betting, you still have to wait. There's a few of the offshore books that'll refund you relatively quickly, but even then, Steve, you're going to have to wait, you know. Most of the offshore books, the good ones, you'll get paid in 48 to 72 hours. Very few of them will pay you immediately.
Well, and then the holidays, of course, compound that even more because banks are closed, postal systems down. But once again, goes back to my original statement that, you know, you should not be living and dying by your income flow on a weekly basis when it comes to sports investing. It's the same thing as a financial investment. You know, you shouldn't be in the stock market and then have to pull that money out 2 days later.
Well, people shouldn't bet games because they're on TV, right? But they do. I mean, that's the nature. There wouldn't be a gambling industry unless people gambled recklessly, Steve.
Well, no question. Like I said earlier, do you think we'd be watching these bowl games on weeknights especially? They're sitting home doing nothing. But, I mean, when there's 2 6-6 teams playing like Appalachian State or somebody from the MAC, do you think anybody's really watching these games unless they have a rooted interest? So there's nothing wrong with playing these TV games. But once again, money management's the key. You know, if you play, say, 3% of bankroll on a normal play, you play 1% on these TV games. You can still have fun with it. It's not going to hurt you one way or the other.
Yeah, when people with bigger bankrolls live like that. But for the most part, I'd say people are betting like 25% of their bankroll.
No question. Yeah.
You know, maybe 50%. I see it all the time. I'm going all in. People will go all in. But you know, there's different ways of approaching it. But the type of people that are willing to bet big money on football games aren't always the most disciplined people. It's kind of a weird, you know, it's hard to be a good capper and be sharp with money. I mean, living in Vegas, I saw it firsthand. I used to see guys, you know, that were great. They'd pick winners all the time, and somehow they'd be broke all the time because of their weird money management systems. And I've been there and done that myself as well. So Army and Navy play. That is the one game on TV on Saturday. Of course, Army beat them last year for the first time in 14 years. And this is only the third time since 1978 that the Commander-in-Chief Trophy is on the line when they play each other in this traditional football game. Army have only won it six times in their history, man, all right? You know, Army have only won this trophy six times. That's some serious motivation. Navy are in a revenge spot, yes, but you know, I think Army want this Commander-in-Chief Trophy real bad. Haven't won it since 1996. Like we said, only the third time since 1978 that the Commander-in-Chief Trophy is in play here. This is going to be a fun football game here tomorrow.
Yeah, they lost 14 times in a row until last year, and Army's been getting closer. You know, we talked about it last year. They were getting closer the previous few seasons and definitely catching up to Navy in terms of talent and ability, and they finally won the game last year. We saw a good amount of money coming in Army. That line dropped several points last year, and they closed as a small dog, won outright. And this year they've been the better team slightly with an 8-3 record, Navy 6-5. But I say slightly because Navy's played the more difficult schedule overall. And the one thing that jumps out to me in this game, Gabe, is the run defense. Because obviously that's all that matters because both teams run the ball basically every play. In fact, when Army beat Air Force a few weeks ago, a very similar option military team, Navy did not throw a single pass in that game. They threw 59 running plays, no passing. And they won 21-0 as a six-point road dog. So that really jumps out to me because that was only a few weeks ago. Navy, meanwhile, a 48-45 shootout against Air Force earlier in the year as a seven-point home favorite, and they gave up over 200 passing yards to Air Force. But overall, I think Navy's had the better run defense this year. The numbers are pretty equal, but they played the tougher schedule of opponents. But Army's been a slightly better running team offensively. So they look pretty evenly matched this year. Should be a great game.
And this game also comes down to, I think the cliche of whoever wants it more is often overused in sports. The reality is, generally, 99.9% of the time, the more talented team ends up winning. And it's hard to overcome talent and skill. But with this Army-Navy game, you kind of do throw up the records. It's just sort of a battle of wills. They both run the same damn offense. Navy can throw the football a little bit, not that well, but Army do not throw the football at all. But I just think Army coming in a better place. I know Navy played a little bit, you know, a tougher schedule, but if you look at Army's schedule, it wasn't that bad. You know, you look, they played Ohio State, they played Duke. You know, they played some teams along the way. I just think Army's sort of trending a little bit upwards, and this isn't the best Navy team we've seen in past years. Abby's okay at quarterback, but he's no Keenan Reynolds. I like Bradshaw, who seemingly has been there forever, the Army quarterback. I think Army are going to beat him outright. I'm going to take him plus the points. I think they beat him outright. And, you know, the whole thing about the total, it's been 11 straight years the game's gone under the number. We know when military academies play each other, it's just an automatic under for the most part. You mentioned an Army shutout Air Force, the 21-0 game. The Navy Air Force game was a higher scoring one, but what do you make of this? Everybody's talking about this under run right now of 11 in a row.
Yeah, like I said, that Navy game, 93 points, 21 points in the Army Air Force game, so a huge difference, but they did throw for a lot of yards. Air Force threw for over 200. Army's not going to do that. They don't throw the ball at all. They throw even less than Navy. One thing I want to point out, though, is they are calling for snow. This line was 51 earlier in the week. It went down to 46.5 several days ago. Now it's at 46. I think maybe some of that had to do with the fact they were calling for possible snow. But last year the total closed at 46.5, and they totaled 38 points. In fact, each of the last 2 years, the final score has been exactly 21-17. 11 straight unders, and the median score over those 11 games has been 38 points, and that's the exact score the last 2 years. So it's been pretty consistent. And the snowfall is supposed to start around 3 o'clock Eastern when this game kicks off, and they could get several inches. Not sure how much of a factor that is, though, considering that both teams run the ball every play.
All right, so the Packers play the Browns this week. Here's an interesting number as far as the Cleveland Browns are concerned with Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon returned last week, 85 yards in his debut. Pretty impressive. 85 yards in his debut. Cleveland Browns covered a point spread last week, a rarity. Cleveland with Josh Gordon in a lineup, 17-17-2 against the spread. With Josh Gordon not in the lineup, 17-37-2. 20 games, 20-game difference there without Josh Gordon as opposed to 500 with Josh Gordon in the lineup. A little bit different when you're covering 13.5 point spreads, 14 points on the road against the Chargers than you are when it's only three here right now. I don't like the Browns this week. I think the Packers beat them, but I wanted to throw that up there. It's interesting the impact that Josh Gordon does have. And for you DFS players out there, I do like Josh Gordon this week. He will be in my lineup.
Yeah, that's fantastic information, Gabe. I like that. And the Packers are not a good defensive team this year, so I think he could have some good numbers. On the surface, though, like you said, it's very difficult to back Cleveland in a short price range because this team is 0-12 straight up. They're still 3-9 against the spread. And when they're only a 3 or 3.5 point dog, you're basically asking them to win outright. And then on the other side of the coin, Green Bay is playing better now with Hundley. They almost won at Pittsburgh as a huge dog on Sunday night 2 weeks ago, and then they beat Tampa and covered last week at home. So it looks like they're playing better football, and they've gone 3-1 against the spread their last four. So, yeah, I mean, you're always trying to find spots to play these big dogs like Cleveland, but the problem is they're not a big dog this week.
Yeah, that is the problem. I like the Packers here. And I tell you what, Steve, the Packers could get back in this thing, man. They're 6-6. They win this football game. They get Aaron Rodgers coming back next week. Rodgers is back next week. So they could potentially run the table. I tell you, everything's upside down in the NFL right now, man. What we think we know now is going to be completely different 4 weeks from now.
Yeah, and I mean, that NFC is so wide open. I do think Philadelphia is probably the best team, and Minnesota's really good as well, especially defensively. But, yeah, Green Bay, if they're healthy with Rodgers, I mean, I think their defense is a concern, but offensively they could put some points up probably.
Yeah, you know what's crazy, though? Everyone talks about how much down and different the Atlanta Falcons are this year compared to last year. And, you know, there's no arguing the fact. They're scoring 11 less points a game. But I didn't really realize it thinking about it. You know that last night going into the game they were 7-5. It's the exact same freaking record they had last year at this time, Steve.
I did not realize.
Me
I
neither.
Felt like really they were 7-5 last. They ended up being the number one seed, didn't
yes.
they?
Yes, yeah, they ended up. Yeah, they were. No, the Cowboys were, but they lost.
Were they?
Yeah, because remember,
my memory's failing me because
exactly.
I don't remember that.
Exactly, Cowboys
all.
Were like 14-2, but it got bounced right away, so no one really remembered. No, I know. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, the Falcons, exact same scenario, and then they ran the table, and they ended up going 11-5. So that's what I'm saying. Like, we don't really know. It's like, yeah, you're putting these teams in now. You know, the Atlanta Falcons are suddenly 8-5 again. They play the Saints again. Kamara's hurt. Let's say they beat the Saints again. Just like that, boom, the Falcons would win the division, and the Saints would lose because of the tiebreaker. Like,
yeah.
This stuff's wide open. And it's weird because when you say it's wide open, normally, like, the AFC playoff picture's wide open. Because they all suck. You know, the NFC is sort of wide open because they're all really good, but they're all playing each other, and anything can happen still.
Yeah, what's funny about the AFC, though, is that right now, if you look at the mathematical odds, there's four teams that have an 88% chance of better getting in, and the Titans and Jaguars are two of them, and then Pittsburgh and New England are basically locks to be in. So there's really only two spots left because the NFC West is so bad with the three leaders at 6-6. But yeah, you feel like, and New England looks so good right now. It's really hard to imagine New
England
won't
be
there.
They're going to the Super Bowl. Yeah, the Pittsburgh's not on their level, and no one.
Here's something I
want
to throw out though: is New England will have home field. They'll run it. They'll get to Minnesota. But Minnesota right now could get home field, and then they would have a clear path all the way to the Super Bowl, including hosting the Super Bowl in their new stadium.
I think Minnesota lose this week, and I've been riding them. I hate betting against them.
Terrible spot for him this week.
Yeah, I'm
third straight road game.
Exactly. I'm a big Zimmer guy. He's 31-8 against the spread against non-division opponents. They're 10-2, 9-3 against the spread. But like you said, third consecutive road game. Four out of their last five games have been on the road. People sort of give up on Carolina every time they lose, but they're still an 8-4 football team. You look at the numbers. Carolina scored 22.4 points per game. Minnesota scored 23.8. Carolina gave up 19.8 points per game. Minnesota gave up 17. Like, that's what when we're talking about the NFC, guys, there's not a lot of, margins or space in between a lot of these football teams, Steve.
Yeah, this reminds me so much of the Sunday night game last week, where the odds makers had no choice but to keep inflating the point spread on the Eagles because they've been money machines. They were 10-1 straight up, 9-2 against the spread, and we got the Seattle Seahawks as a rare home underdog. Now we're getting Carolina as a somewhat rare home dog, and it's the same situation. The odds makers with Minnesota at 10-2, 9-3 against the spread have to inflate the number, and they have no choice but to make them a small road favorite, even though it is their fourth road game in 5 weeks. And on top of that, they're coming off some high-profile games. A road win at Atlanta last week, the Thanksgiving divisional game at Detroit the week before, home game against the Rams, and a road win against the Redskins. I mean, they've had a tough slate here. It's hard to imagine they'll have their A game this week.
Yeah, you got to like the Panthers here. Seahawks and Jets. You know, one thing quickly about the Vikings and the Panthers, too, is that it reminds me a lot of the game that we saw on Thursday night. You know, the Saints, better record going into a kind of a hungry, angry, pissed off Falcon team. Falcons end up getting it done. I think Carolina finds a way of getting it done in this spot as well. Seattle, nice win for them, even though Philadelphia moved the ball. They just, you know, they turned it over. They did stupid things. That Peterson doesn't challenge stuff. I think this is a tough spot for Seattle going into Jacksonville. The question is, if the Jags are for real, they win this game. And, you know, the Jags are very impressive. I'm not saying that they're not for real, but, you know, for real, real. Like, Jalen Ramsey's talking crap about how no one loves giving love to the Jags and no one's respecting them. So this is where you earn your respect. You know, beat Russell Wilson in this spot. I think they can.
Yeah, and the reason they don't get a lot of respect, just kind of like Minnesota's, they're a good defensive team. But Jacksonville's not much of an offensive team. They're a run-based offense. They don't throw the ball that well, but they play great defense. So it's not the type of team in the modern NFL like the Patriots, for example, which is all offense, you know, mediocre defense that catches your eye. Seattle did catch a break here. This game's a time change, and now it's a 4:25 Eastern kickoff instead of a 1 o'clock. So that's a big break for Seattle, having go coast-to-coast after the Sunday night home dog went over Philly. But still not a great situation for Seattle, especially a non-conference game. And you feel like this is just a bigger game for Jacksonville overall.
All right, thanks for joining us, Dave. Could be cold, real cold. But, hey, it's a cold world. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We welcome Al Vartanian Castro to the program. I got to tell you, Al, like, you know, you look like the Comunista leader right now. You got a green shirt on. You got the beard.
You got three stars.
You got a three-star general hat on here. That's a Juventus hat, you're telling me? Sure?
It is, 100%.
Are you sure?
Yes. The Castro.
Juventus have any before. Ties to, like, the communist and the past or something like that?
No ties, Gabe. That's hilarious.
Yeah, you know what? You notice, like, when you put the look on together, you're like, yeah, I kind of look a little bit. I don't know, Al. You know what you look like? You look like a dude that would get double-checked in an airport. That's what you're looking
hey,
like.
Hey, I always get double-checked in the airport, no matter what.
Really?
It's my last name.
Really?
Always. It's like, Mr. Vartanian.
Oh, and then they ask you, what's that?
They come with the clipboard, and they're like, you've been randomly picked.
Oh, they always tell you it's random.
Yeah, right? I always get the pat-down and that x-ray thing. And then when I crossed the border, even just going to Buffalo, there'd be like four or five people in the car, no problems, as soon as they get mine. Where are your parents from? Where's your dad from? Oh, Lebanon? Blah, Armenian? Blah, blah. And it's just, it's
all. Oh, then it starts. Yeah.
It's never ending. Yeah, it's terrible. But it is what it is, right?
Poor Vartanian.
That's the truth, man.
Come on, look at him. Play a harmless guy. He's just trying to go to the Galleria Mall in Buffalo and shop.
That's what it was, going to the Galleria Mall, exactly. Didn't come back with anything.
Well, at least you got back.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't end up in Gitmo. All right, so MLS Cup. It's going to be a little chilly weather in Toronto.
Yeah, I feel like people are making a big deal of this weather, man. It's not that big of a deal.
Well, it's not ultra cold like in real life, but it's not fun for sports. It's not good for soccer.
No.
And it is a windy area where the stadium is.
Yeah.
And it's easy for you to say is you're not even going to be at the game. You're going to be, like, under a Christmas tree.
I'm going to be putting together a Christmas tree while the game goes on.
So listen to Al, big man. It's not even that cold. He's not even there.
I never said. I'm like, I don't think it's as big as a deal as people are thinking, man. It is what it is. It's going to be cold. The pitch will be a bit harder.
Not that big of a deal. It's cold.
Yeah, it'll be cold, but I think it's
what happened last year when it was cold? Nothing happened.
It's not going to change the game. I don't think it'll change the game. It won't change the outcome for either team.
You don't believe that ultra-cold weather has an impact on the quality of play?
It's not ultra-cold, though. What's it going to be? 3-4 degrees? I know it'll be a bit colder over there, but I don't know. I would definitely give the advantage maybe to Toronto because of it, because they're used to playing in that type of weather. But Seattle's played in that weather as well.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
No, you're right. It's not over.
It's not game-changing cold.
You're right.
Yeah, it's not icy. I mean, if there was snow and it was ice and it was anything like the CFL game, the Grey Cup game, then we're talking about a serious issue.
All right, so the number is TFC's minus 125, the draw's plus 260, Seattle's plus 333, over under 2.5. Of course, last year they played a scoreless draw. Is a scoreless draw a possibility again, in your opinion?
I think so. I think the game gets played out nearly the same way that it got played out last year. I actually think Seattle actually a bit better. They've gotten a lot better. They've had some good pieces like Will Bruin up front. Clint Dempsey is playing unbelievable at the moment. And I think that's the key for Toronto FC.
Dempsey didn't play in the MLS Cup final last year,
exactly.
Right?
They have to figure out a way to shut him down. The best part about Toronto FC and where I think they have the edge is in coaching. Greg Vanney is such a good tactical coach that if you watch that last game against Columbus, he was constantly changing formations because TFC were playing terrible against Columbus in the first 15, 20 minutes. So sloppy. Even throughout the match, they became a sloppier team.
Well, I wanted to bring that up because, look, Seattle played against the Portland Timbers and the Houston Dynamo.
Mm-hmm.
Handled them easily. 7-0 on aggregate 4 games.
Yeah.
Then conversely, you look at TFC, an average Red Bull team and an overachieving Crew team, 3-2.
Yeah.
I get it. They were without Altidore and Giovinco in one of those games. But nevertheless, TFC have been offensively challenged for about a month or so, Al, if not longer. And, you know, this team, you brought it up to me, and I didn't realize this, but I've seen others say the same thing, that if TFC win, they will cement themselves as the best MLS team ever.
Yeah, you can't argue it.
You know, the team claimed the season's first league trophy in record time by the biggest margin ever. TFC, a minus 37 goal differential, 74 goals scored. It would make them the most prolific MLS Cup team ever.
Yeah.
But they need to win the damn cup
finish
it off.
This is that added pressure on TFC that Seattle don't have. Seattle, okay, repeat. That's big, too. But Toronto FC, this is what they've been going for since the beginning of the season. Actually, since they lost that match to the Sounders, we need the MLS Cup. There's nothing more that we can do. Okay, yeah, we got the regular season record now, great. But you need the MLS Cup. So that's where the added pressure is on Toronto FC. Coming back to the Sounders scoring more goals than TFC and conceding less, you got to remember, Seattle against Houston in both matches were a man down. Vancouver, not the best of teams. They basically have no attack at all. Seattle, if you look at both paths for each team, Seattle had the easier route. TFC had the more difficult route. And compounded on top of that, they're missing Altidore and Giovinco for one of those matches. And they still went away to Columbus and came away with a 0-0 draw. We've got the clean sheet. So I just think that
They didn't have a shot on goal, though.
I know, but they weren't playing that style, though, like I told you
before.
I know,
but they still didn't have a shot on goal.
I just don't think it's as bad as people think. Seattle, personally, for me, right now, have the players that are better formed than Toronto FC and are playing much better than TFC, realistically. That's why I hate to say it, and I hope it's not true, being a TFC guy, but I think Seattle's going to win this game.
In regulation?
In regulation. I can see it going extra time as well, but I like Seattle in regulation.
You're going to have to lock down a pick here. You're kind of all over the place here.
I just hate picking the regulation extra time thing.
It could be scoreless. Now Seattle's going to win. Let's,
I think Seattle's going
to win. You agreed that you like the under 2.5.
I like the under 2.5, 100%.
Yeah, it should be a lower scoring game. Now, we should note,
I like the under 2.5.
Giovinco wasn't
in the cup.
He wasn't in the penalty kicks last year. He got subbed out late in the game. So he missed the PKs there.
That's interesting. I wonder if he'll be back on it if they do get a penalty, because Victor Vasquez took the penalty against Columbus. But it was actually an incredible save. It was a good penalty. It was hard. It was down. It was low into the corner. The keeper just saved it. Kind of jumped his line a bit early, which no one is actually talking about. But if he gets back on it, I don't know how much that's going to mean if they don't get a penalty. So it doesn't really matter.
I'm tempted to. I think, you know, this is real tough. It wouldn't shock me if TFC won 1-0 and they were able to bag one. Wouldn't shock me if the pressure got to TFC. Seattle scored an early one.
That's what
I'm
thinking.
And then suddenly there's a panic with Toronto, and maybe they end up giving up another one and they lose.
I don't think there'll be a panic from Toronto FC because of the experience and because of Greg Vanney. He doesn't let his players get like that. TFC doesn't get – they don't panic.
But the pressure and the atmosphere in the stadium, it's going to be –
it's added for sure.
Yeah. I mean, TFC have been around a while, Al. This is it. They need to win now.
They have to win this one. They have to win.
This is the culmination of everything of this franchise.
If they play – similar to the way they played against Columbus,
they're in trouble.
They're in so much trouble. I mean, defensively, they're still pretty good, but Columbus didn't really have anything going forward. Seattle has a ton going forward. You have Clint Dempsey and Will Bruin coming at you, two of the best forwards in the game right now. It's going to be big issues for TFC if they play that way.
I'm looking to take Seattle plus the goal, but it's minus 200. Can take Seattle plus a half a goal, or I could take a shot with the draw. I could take a shot at the draw. The draw is not bad. You know, pays plus 260.
That's not bad at all. If you feel like it's going to go to extra time, I like Seattle. I like the under, and Seattle lift the cup, as much as that pains me to say.
I think the best bet in this game is the under 2.5.
Yeah, the under 2.5.
I'd be shocked if there was 3 goals.
I was talking with Marty on the full 90. I'm like, what if this ended up being a shootout?
What, like 4-3 game or something?
Well, like you said, what if Seattle comes out? You know, maybe they pop one or two. Now, that game is open now.
Yeah, they'd have to open it up.
But, again, TFC have had one of the best defenses in the league. So you can't forget that, even though
we
they
should
played
note,
as poorly
Sounders
as they did.
Captain Ozzy Alonso didn't dress for the second leg of their game against Houston. Brad Evans missed the match with a longstanding back injury. Jordan Morris returned from the hamstring, but will likely be limited in a substitute role in this cup game.
Nothing major. The biggest thing for Seattle is the return of Gabriel Torres, because he was suspended for that second leg. That's huge.
And their goalie used to be on TFC, too, right?
Yeah, remember that save last season? Yeah. They did everything but beat him. That's their biggest obstacle.
Yeah. Under's the play. It's a tough game, but yeah. You can't sit on the fence, Vartanian. This isn't the Vartanian
fence company. Seattle to lift the cup and the under 2.5.
Okay, so you're saying ultimately Seattle wins to qualify, whatever. Yeah. You know, Seattle's going to end up winning.
Yeah, which it sucks. But
well, we nearly dropped an F-bomb.
I know, I'm sorry. He's
like, oh, I know.
I don't know. You know what I mean?
I'll be honest. I actually swore today on Red Heat and Rage Radio by accident.
I have TFC's last match in my head, and I'm like,
I know.
They really need to bounce back from that. Like, Seattle's just
I like the under 2.5. All right, enjoy the game, Al. Don't worry, guys. Don't bring a jacket. It won't be cold, says Vartanian as he's sipping
T-shirt.
Hot chocolate.
T-shirts and shorts.
At home. Game time decision continues. Game time decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. We now welcome in a man, one of the few men that has more stories than I do, actually. All right. And, you know, we've got his book right here, Big League Babylon. A great, great title. I get it. The cross between Babel and Babylon.
Oh, yeah, without the Y.
Yeah, you see what I did?
Very,
very slick. I'm actually working on a book right now as well, no joke. Sports, drugs, and rock and roll.
I would buy your book.
You know, and I look forward to reading this book. I really do.
Sure.
I haven't had an opportunity. I feel like Larry King or David Letterman. Remember when he'd have guests on? He'd be like, no idea.
Never did so, any pre-tape or so any pre-questions.
So is this book about, NASA and astrology, right there, John? Like,
oh, yeah, Seinfeld and King. You didn't even pick it up.
Exactly. In the old days, Larry King would really like, he'd ask Steven Spielberg, tell me about E.T., What is exactly E.T.? Is E.T. a person, a thing? What is E.T.? It's like, well, you know, Larry, E.T. is kind of, you know, biggest movie ever. Like, Larry would have no idea.
No.
You know, like, he'd have no clue, right? Like,
yeah, and he's still relevant, kind of.
I love, though, he's hardcore. He's a Dodger fan. He looks like a lizard. He just sits by an old plate.
Yeah, there. Not far from Mary Hart.
So, you're a Canadian media icon, you know, based out of Toronto for the most part, but you're actually a Montrealer, right? Going back not so long ago?
We used to go to Stanley Cup parades.
Yeah, it was like your annual race.
66, 68, 69, 71, 73, 76, 70. They go, yeah. Hey, Johnny, you going to the Stanley Cup parade? Nah, I'll go next year. That's how cocky we were.
And
it was true.
So you actually do remember when the Leafs won, though. Kind of like...
I was just a toddler. Yeah. You know who my cousin was? Talk about growing up in Montreal, cheering for the wrong team. Gary Monahan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, Sean Monahan, he may be related, is my cousin. Yeah. Gary's my cousin. He scored, you know, he's a Toronto Maple Leaf. So I'd be cheering kind of for the Leafs living in Montreal when they won all those Stanley Cups.
Yeah, but it was tough because you were in the middle of this stuff. And, you know, I used to be a fan of yours. I loved your original TV show on TSN.
Thanks, Gabe.
The sports show, and it was edgier and... Of course, you know, edgier and TSN don't go hand in hand, obviously. But you pushed the envelope at the time. And, you know, I enjoyed it. I was like, man, this guy's actually, Tanner, you know what? You brought Let's be real. The Canadian media scene can be so damn staid, tried, and freaking boring.
Hear, hear.
You know, you brought it. You did your thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. But, you know, you've lasted so long in this business. What's the biggest thing to change about the business from now until when you got into it?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, I mean, hanging out with Bill Lee at his house after he was released in 1982. Yeah. You know, hanging out with Aislinn and Tim Burke. Naked hot tub parties at Wendell Clark's house. Going to Doug Gilmore's wedding and staying up all night at his house.
It's a big difference, isn't it, that today's day and age, first off, there's a lot of more younger people in the media.
Yeah.
Because the media companies, they don't want to pay anybody. So it's easier to pay some,
right,
some pipsqueak that looks cute, put them on TV. But you're right. They have no life experience. They have no stories. They have right. no nothing to back it up. But therefore, then the players, they're not going to want to hang out with them.
Right.
Because I remember when I covered the Expos. They used to ask me. They used to tell me, Marenzi, we're going to Wanda's. That was my invite.
Wanda's.
Like, the players would tell me, hey, we're going to Shea Parade tonight, Kate. Sort of let me know. They weren't letting everyone in the media know. You know, you were part of that inner circle because they didn't have to worry about you leaking. Oh, yeah, I did coke with, you know, a guy on the Oilers last night. You know, nowadays, these media guys would be freaked out. Oh, my God, I saw this player doing cocaine in a bathroom, and it would be this big thing.
Yeah.
That's what's changed. Players don't trust the media anymore. Have you noticed that?
Absolutely.
Big difference.
They're
huh?
trying to keep their investment. And in speaking of,
because like you said, you used to party with a Gilmore, a Clark.
And all
have
the
you ever party with Austin Matthews?
About.
No.
No,
right?
no. And see? How close can you get? They're all on their iPhones. They're all looking at their little, you know, they're all listening to music. You can't get
and
close.
And AS guy saying, you know what? He'd be like, stay away from that John Gallagher.
I know. Oh, my God. And
tell us about Gretzky, though. You've had some great nights with Gretzky's over at Gretzky's at Oasis there.
Absolutely,
huh?
yeah. I mean, I used to bounce Paulina Gretzky in Snuggies on my knee at the farm. And we'd go, I mean,
Jake. Dude, how many people right now? Like,
how many
bouncing
people?
Paulina. How many people want to bounce Paulina? But that's it, yeah.
No, she was in Huggies. Yeah, right. And, but she was. She
be
was
careful,
like
John.
Year,
you know what's going on.
A year and a half.
We're going to end up on one of these Me Too hashtags soon.
I mean, we used to host the Wayne Gretzky Celebrity Softball Tournament, you know?
That's
and,
awesome.
And
so you
Doherty
were the host of the Wayne Gretzky Tournament.
Yeah,
wow.
Sure, yeah.
Bubba so who Smith. Else was there? So yeah, Bruce McNall, obviously. John Candy around.
That's right. Just the heady days, man. The salad years. And the stuff that we do after hours with all those people. I mean, you can't even. I'm not even going to put in that in
the
book. Some
of you can't put in. No.
But there's a lot of stuff in the book. About
no, you weren't. You weren't shy about because the same thing. And when I'm writing my book, I always find it tough. All right, when am I going to say this? I'm like, I'll tell stuff about me, but I'm not going to name names. Oh, I did this with this guy or that guy. But I will ask you, who's a guy, who's an athlete that can party the hardest, and then you see him on the field? Because I got a great story about Esteban Loaiza, the Toronto Blue Jays. He's at an after-hours party in, like, Kensington Market at, like, 6 a.m., and a buddy of mine sees him and says, hey, Esteban. And he's double-fisting it. He's with a bunch of chicks.
Sure.
He's like, Esteban, aren't you pitching tomorrow? He goes, no, man, I pitch today. He goes, I pitch today.
I interviewed Doc Ellis.
So we're big gamblers. So it's like, load up, man. This guy, he pitched his ass off, dude. He pitched great.
Sure.
He was all over. He was sweating it out and stuff like that. So I'm sure there's been times where you were out with a Jay or a Leaf. You're watching them on TV the next day. You're thinking, I can't believe this guy's playing. Right
Absolutely,
now.
Yeah. And again, it's called playing. What's the word? The expression? They're cheating. You know, they're playing guilty or practicing guilty. I interviewed Doc Ellis, who pitched a freaking no hitter against San Diego in 1970 on acid.
Yeah.
On LSD, for goodness sakes. That's a lot of it's in the book. I mean,
tell us about this Mark Wahlberg stuff, because it basically you saved Mark Wahlberg's life.
I did.
You know, the name of the chapter.
There's a shot in there, Gabe, of Mark Wahlberg.
How drinking with John Gallagher saved Mark Wahlberg's life. I got to blame you for this, because why? Why'd you do this? You know, so we could subject these bad movies
so
on us for the rest of the world.
So we could do Planet of the Apes?
Yeah, so we could open up like a Wahlburgers and charge $80 for a hamburger.
I've been to Wahlburgers. Is it any good?
Well, if you save this, no, I mean, I'm not walking in. You save this guy's
You're
having life.
It delivered.
Yeah, you know, you should be getting free damn burgers for life. You should have like cameos in his freaking movie. So tell us about the Wahlberg story.
It's 9/11. We're at the ROM. You know, now it's after midnight, and you know, and
so 9/11 really. So and you're at the ROM. This is in Toronto. That's the
I'm trying to bum a smoke off Harvey.
And the ROM is what? It's the Royal Ontario Museum.
That's
what
it's called. You. Thank you.
Just for people, Rom.
Nah,
people
no problem.
They're thinking, what, you guys at a strip club? Like,
that's right. Richard Harris is there.
So what the hell were you doing at 9/11? On the, why were you there?
I was invited to a big party.
Okay.
And there's William H. Macy, and there's and here comes Mark Wahlberg. So him and I start to have cocktails, and there's a picture in the book of
you guys hit it off because you're drinking.
And yeah, then we hit some bars, and then Gallagher-Wahlberg sightings are popping up all over the place. We get him so drunk that he can't make his he can't make the wake-up call the next day. The wake-up call that would have put him on a flight from Toronto to Boston, and the flight, I think it was American Airlines 1-1 that hit the North Tower.
Oh, okay, so I was kidding about why. I thought, like, you know, he said, I got to stop partying so hard. Like, no, wow.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
And you know what he says a couple of months later in Esquire magazine? You know what, if I was on that flight, Gabe, they wouldn't get those box cutters out. I would have taken those guys down, which is a stupid thing to say.
Yeah,
because
easy,
a lot of people succumbed that day.
It's always easy to say.
He did apologize to all the people who lost their lives and the you know the husbands and the wives.
Because they actually did try. I mean, there's the famous last roll, right?
That's the famous last roll.
Yeah, the guy got up. Yeah. I think Todd.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, but the guy, there's a famous thing on the flight. Right. He got up, and it's on the tape.
Don't you
I get goosebumps right now. He said,
let's
roll. He told like the rest of the passengers, let's roll, let's go.
And it landed into some field in Pennsylvania. Yeah. Don't you think that flight was shot down?
Well.
Conspiracy theories, your freaking fill.
I got to be honest with you. You know, at the time, right after 9/11, you were very, you know, it was almost sacrilegious to question anything about what happened.
That's right.
But now that these years have passed, I think people are starting to wonder about certain things, right? I mean, but I wonder about a lot of things.
I remember going to work that day, and I was out with Mark, and we were like, I woke up at 5 in the afternoon. I'm getting like, your mailbox is full. I remember driving to work and looking for planes to hit the CN Tower. It was a crazy day
It is one of those days that you remember where you were. I do.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to John Lennon, which actually today is the 37th anniversary of John Lennon's assassination.
And
today.
Don't mention the guy who shot him, because that's what that guy wanted. Yeah, don't even mention his name ever.
Scumbag.
I'm driving him in St. John.
It's rare. It's one of those weird deals, too. I was only 10 years old at the time.
Yeah.
And I was actually listening to Shom FM. I remember.
L'Esprit de Montréal.
Yeah. My mother was into rock and stuff. And I remember I heard my mother, I could hear her sort of burst into tears immediately.
No kidding.
And they said John Lennon's just been shot.
Yeah.
He wasn't dead yet. It was earlier in the day.
Sure.
And then I think he died about 8 o'clock at 9 at that night.
And Howard Cosell mentioned it the night before on Monday Night Football. Right.
Amazing.
Hello
right?
again, everyone. Howard Cosell with some sense.
Does it freak
right
you out
there?
How much time passes, how quickly it goes?
Yeah, doesn't it, though? And again,
like, does it feel like just yesterday, like you were young with like Paulina on your lap and,
and watching Rick Monday hit that home run out of Olympic Stadium and Andre Dawson going back, I got this and got this.
So
I always wonder about, you know, how healthy the Terminator was. Jeff Reardon. You know, I talked to a lot of people. He, you know, had a bad back, but bring Steve Rogers in, and that's all he's going to be remembered for.
Billy says to this day, same kind of like Wahlberg says, I would have got him out. Billy says,
yes, he would have got him out.
That's what he said.
He said that several times in his book.
He would have got him out. So the Montreal Canadiens, I know you're a big Canadiens fan.
Huge.
I'm wearing a Habs jersey, pretty much for you, and you got to like the Paris Hogan, big Russian bust that's known for nearly killing someone in the AHL with Hamilton.
I've never seen anyone wear a Paris Hogan shirt. That's amazing.
I used to have a free sponsorship in Montreal with stuff. And I told him I want a jersey that, like, nobody has.
Yeah. So take these. They're on sale.
So, yeah, I got this one. There was high hopes for him. But I saw a story the other day about how it was basically about the Blackhawks, about how the Blackhawks have joined the billionaire club in the NHL.
Sure.
There's only four teams that are worth $1 billion or more in the NHL. The New York Rangers.
That's right.
Chicago Blackhawks now. Toronto Maple Leafs, mm-hmm. and the Montreal Canadiens.
That's right.
And it just sort of angered me when I saw the Canadiens. Canadiens are $9 million under the cap.
Right.
Canadiens haven't won a Stanley Cup in 24, 25 years. Canadiens used to mock the old 67 chance for the Leafs.
Right. Guess what?
What difference does it make? You know, whatever, 40 years, mm-hmm. 28 years, at some point, okay. You both, yeah, you know what I mean?
I mean, give Markov a little love, you know
It's
what
a little frustrating.
What do you mean there's no negotiation? What do you mean if you want loyalty, get a dog, you know? And
that's pretty weak.
That's, like, and, I mean, and.
And listen, I'm not the biggest Markov guy, but a guy's willing to play for next to nothing for you.
Yeah, because guess who Markov's agent is? Markov! Yeah, doesn't have an agent. Just give me the money and I'll.
They're dependents on Carey Price. They just think Carey Price can carry. He can't carry them to a cup.
With that pop gun offense, man.
You know what I found, John? That remember, like before the Leafs, in the early days with the Ballard stuff, it was just like he had the safe, and it was only about the money.
Ballard hit me with a cane twice in his wheelchair at Maple Leaf Gardens.
Like, for real? Like, hard?
Coming
or like,
out of his bunker, Gabe. Hit me twice, and I can't complain because I'll be, you know, I'll be banned from Maple Leaf Gardens for, no, for my life.
He's like Donald Trump. He was like, what was he like, Ballard? Was he really just crazy?
Oh, yeah, he was coming out. He didn't know who I was.
An asshole is like...
To the nines, Jim really McKinney. Was. Jim McKinney would say. I mean, all they wanted, all they, you know...
He was a mean person.
Yeah, right? I worked with McKinney for years. Why would they give, you know, Bernie Perron, why wouldn't they just give him $10,000 more? They traded him to Philly for Doug Favell and Bob Neely.
Guys, I heard a story about Ballard, man. Like, he actually, like, made them... He gave them like $5 a day to eat.
Right.
Like the Toronto Maple Leafs in the old days, guys, were basically going to soup kitchens on the road. No joke. And someone said, aren't you a professional hockey player? He goes, yeah, but our owner doesn't, you know. It's like, we got to get out of here, unfortunately. Time just flew. We got to do this definitely again.
Right on.
I want to read this book. I just got it last night. Didn't get an opportunity to check it out yet. But Big League, Babylon, all kinds of stories about, you know, the radio industry, the TV industry, sports celebrities. John's crazy life and everything else in between, including all the lovely ladies.
Oh, you got to chapter. That chapter.
Yeah, chapter about the ladies.
You may have to shower after reading that one.
I can't wait. Hey,
use the Perry Shogun's jersey while you're showering.
John Gallagher, nice to meet you in person. Thanks, man. Legend right here, man. A legend right here, John
Back
Gallagher.
At you, baby.